If you're staying for the workshop here, come on over to this section because we're going to kind of get a little more close-knit. Let's get to know one another. Come on over. People took that seriously. It's always a sense of victory when you turn your cell phone off when you're standing on the stage. You turn it on and there's a missed call because you know it would have come right in the middle of some strategic point. And of course, it's my wife. You know how that works. Anyway, 10:45, and what time are we supposed to finish this?
Let's see.
What do you think?
12:10.
Yes. Can we finish earlier?
You can finish as early as
you like. Anybody up for nap time? That'd be cool. All right, I think we should shoot for that. Okay. This workshop is entitled The Relevancy of Leviticus and How It Relates to Hebrews. If you're in the wrong workshop, you can excuse yourself now. Yeah, I'm out of here. I'm leaving too. No, this one's called Living Overseas, A Realistic Snapshot. And what I want to do today in this workshop time is I want to share with you a model of how living overseas works well. And then I want to talk through with you some things that make it not work well. I'm going to back up and share a little bit of our story that I didn't share during the general session. Still going to be a bit vaguer. I think we're recording these workshops, aren't we? Then what do I need both mics on then? Oh, one is for recording. All right. So I'm still going to be a little bit more ambiguous about certain details. Back in 99, when you all were somewhere in junior high or so, is that about right? I was old then, older now, and the church I was going to said, let's partner with a people group. And the IMB was encouraging this, you know, pick a people group and try to help out in the effort to reach them. Well, we didn't know what that meant. So as a church, we were sitting around going, what do we do? Well, then during that year, an earthquake happened in the country where our people group lived. And so we said, an opportunity. So we mobilized a group of people from our church to go over and work in the soup kitchens and the temporary tent cities and just to help any way we could to be a blessing to the people that we were partnered to help reach. When they came back from that trip, we began a discussion which went something like this. What would it look like in the future for us to send a church planting team all out of this church fellowship? People who already know each other, people who already know how to work together, people who share a common experience of church in the States, people who have a common vocabulary for evangelism and missions, people who have the same spiritual history when it comes to that people group, and people who already know how to relate on a church level. So that's what we did. From 99 to 2003, we spent those years preparing a church planting team to leave our home fellowship. Along the way, we had to do lots of, as I mentioned, lots of training and lots of strategy and lots of learning about the people group, about the culture. We started doing some basic language study. We started looking at businesses to start because in that particular country, you couldn't come in under a missionary visa. So we had to look at different businesses that could work in that city. What could we as a church planting team do together to run a business? Well, none of us had ever run a business before. I mean, what do we know about that? And so we had to work through all those kind of things. And in the end, and this is what I drew up here on the board for you, I want to describe a healthy and functioning church planting team overseas has three different dimensions to it. There's this dimension called community. There's a dimension called cause. And a dimension called corporation. I I'm going to share a little bit more about each of those three in a few minutes. So 2003 came along, and eight of us, my family of four and four single adults, all from our church fellowship, packed up and moved overseas together. We landed in a city that hadn't had a church in over 100 years, and even then, and in the history of it, it wasn't our people group. It was a different international group living in that city that was the church. So there's no recorded history of a local church with those local people in that city. During our two-year time there, we established the business platform that we were going to be working on there. We established residence permits and work visas to live there and work there. And we started to get to know the language and the culture in a much more personal way. A year after we arrived, the next eight from our church landed. And they moved into a big city. They didn't move into our city immediately, but to start learning language and culture there. So as we were moving out, those folks started moving in. And there were actually too many folks from that church that moved over there, so they ended up forming two different church planting teams within the country. And we struggled like every church planting team struggles. We all had culture shock. We all struggled with the language. We all were frustrated with our people group. We all felt like flops and failures. Our business had a tremendously difficult time getting started with a bunch of people that have degrees in Bible history and really functional, practical degrees like psychology, like mine. And you know, here we are running a business in a different country, in a different language. It was horrible. And so we struggled in every way. But I'll tell you this, and this is an important thing as we get started in this realistic look of life overseas. Our pre-existing relationships kept us together. We already knew each other, already loved each other, already committed to each other, signed a covenant to be in team together, and we weren't going to bail out. Okay, let's talk about these three dimensions. Community is life as a family. You're a part of the group because you're part of the family. You don't have to do anything. Over the Christmas holidays, did you go home and spend some time with your families? I don't know what you did. Let me describe our Christmas holidays to you. I basically stood up only to go to the refrigerator or to the bathroom. The rest of the time I was sitting down or laying down in front of the TV watching football or whatever, whoever had the remote control had on the TV at the time. We spent hours and hours and hours doing nothing. Why? Because we're family. My brother's over there snoring. I don't care. He's my brother. My sister's drooling on the pillow. We're making fun of her. You know why? Because we're family. That's what you do. You're the only there because you're part of the family. You're part of the group. It's not because of your productivity. It's not because of your giftedness. It's not because of your stellar good looks, your intellectual capacities. It's just because you belong in the family. Every good church planting team that I saw overseas had this dimension of community. I see some international students here, and I think that's awesome. I think that one of the most challenging things about being an international student is being removed from this dynamic of family. I don't know how much you miss your families. I don't know how much you would prefer to be with them at times. But I hope and pray that every believer international student that comes to the States finds community and family in the body of Christ, where you do have true spiritual brothers and sisters. You do have spiritual moms and dads. You have people that embrace you and welcome you in their home just because you're part of God's family. I hope that's your experience. So community is an important dimension. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer made this comment. He said, regarding community, the elimination of the weak is the death of fellowship. Let me say that again. The elimination of the weak is the death of fellowship. What that means is that in this family dimension, if you reveal your weakness or your struggles and you get kicked out of the community, then it's the death of fellowship. Nobody will ever be vulnerable again. So community can be really disrupted if folks are judgmental or they put requirements on being in the family. All right. Cause is, if community is a family, cause is like a military unit. It's being a fellow soldier for Christ. Cause is the degree to which we all understand the purpose for which we're here. When you live overseas, there's so many times where you stop and you say, "This is hard. What am I doing here? Why did I come here?" The cause. This makes it pleasant to live there in the midst of the struggle. These are the people you share your suffering with. But why do you endure the suffering? It's because of the cause. The cause says, we are here to do the work of the Father and to accomplish the will of the Father and to finish His work. If you're not clear about your cause, then you'll get disoriented and bail out. The cause includes church planting strategy. It includes methods of evangelism. The same way that we would try to reach people for Christ in Central Asia would not work in Germany. The way that people are trying to reach Germans would not work in Brazil. In fact, what works in Brazil is closer to working in Central Asia than it would be working in Germany. How you go about it? What does church look like? Are we trying to do buildings with steeples and structures and start new Baptist conventions? Or are we trying to do house church? Are we trying to do a replicable model that can reproduce quickly? This is part of our cause, and you have to be on the same page about your cause. Third is corporation. Corporation includes two things. The corporation through which you go, which includes all of its rules, job descriptions, salary, health insurance. It includes all that's corporate about getting there, but it's also what you're doing while you're there. When somebody asks you the question in a restricted access country, why are you here? Well, the answer is not your spiritual cause. The answer is your business corporation. So I met a guy in Central Asia who was 24 years old, right out of college, and he was there, and his business, his corporation, was that I said, "What are you actually doing here? You're not here on a missionary visa. What are you doing here?" He said, "I'm a business consultant." I said, "How old are you?" 24. "What was your major?" "Bible history." "Where have you worked?" "Taco Bell." I said, "Okay, I see a little bit of a problem here." I said, who do you consult with business?" I said, "Who do you consult?" He said, "Well, I consult people about their life every day." I said, "I'm not asking that question." I said, what business person has benefited from your expertise as a consultant?" And he looked at me and he goes, "Nobody." And I said, "So if I am a local person here, either I see right through your propped up platform and I think you're a fraud and a scam, or I think you have absolutely no credibility whatsoever and I'm not going to be friends with you. You have nothing to add value to my life. Which are you? Do you have nothing to add value to my life, or are you a fraud? Which are you?" And he's like, "Well, I don't think that really represents the full scope of what I'm doing here." I said, "No, what it represents is that you're here because of Jesus Christ. And that's good." This young man, 24 years old, was clear about his cause. But he was so poorly defined in his business, his reason for being there, that nobody locally wanted to be friends with the guy because they didn't see any benefit in it. So there's a problem with the corporation. So during our church planting years overseas, there is a group within the missionary culture called Member Care. And Member Care are the people that go around and care for missionaries that live overseas, right? Well, my background is not in theology and it's not in business. It's in counseling. And so part of what my role was to travel around to these different church planting teams and to say, "How are you doing? What's working and what's not working," right? And inevitably, what was going well could be identified either as, "We love living here together. We see traction and progress in our cause," or "We're proving to show a beneficial business or bringing some benefit to the local culture that's here." Everything positive rendered down to one of those three dimensions. Likewise, everything negative they had to say about their church planting team either came down to not sharing life together as church and community, mismatched expectations and methodologies in their cause, or an absolutely ridiculous business platform that gave them no credibility, or issues with their sending organization. They couldn't get their insurance papers filed properly. They weren't allowed to leave the field to come home for a funeral. The issues that they had sometimes had to do with the corporation or the agency that sent them. So I want you to think for just a minute. How many of you have been overseas at some point, other than in America? Okay. What are the things that you see would be problematic? Can you think of something that would be a problem in the area of community? What would be a problem that you've seen in the area of the strategic goal of church planning or of evangelism? Or what would be a problem that you've seen in the area of the structure, the organization that either sent them or that they were representing while they were there? Would you take a minute and turn to the folks around you and talk about these three and see if you can identify some of the problematic areas, the hard realities and the issues of living overseas? Go ahead and do that now. Okay, let's talk. What are some of the issues, the very realistic issues that come up in the area of community, how we share life together for folks that are living overseas? What are some of the real problem areas? Anything that comes to mind? Yeah. Yep, the community swimming pool is pretty shallow. And not that people are shallow, sometimes they are, but mostly just the number of people you can draw from. We loved living there with these four single adults. We genuinely delighted in sharing life with them. But as a husband and father, and for my wife as a wife and a mother, it was difficult for them to relate to some of the issues we were experiencing as spouse or as parents. And what we found that we were missing was community that could relate as peers in that area. Great thought. Appreciate you sharing that. In fact, when one of the folks was stepping forward to try to be part of our church planning team, we said, look, really, you can't come on our team. He's like, why not? Well, we don't want to tell you. Yeah, we finally had to be honest with the guy. We said, look, you're just a jerk. You know, the bottom line is nobody likes you. So until you can get here and be likable, we're not going to let you go over there and be unlikable. You know, figure out how to be likable here and then export that likableness over there. But don't be jerky here and think you're going to go over there and be cool. You're not. You're a jerk. So anyway, it's one of those things, you know. And if you get a jerk on your team, hey, hello, you got to be family with them. You don't really get along great with everybody on your team. Actually, the guy turned out to be a pretty decent guy. So just to let you know, there was progress there. Worked out well. What else in the community area?
Kind of when people want to be like lone rangers and they don't see that the team is quarterback.
The individualism. Missionaries tend to be pioneers. They're the kind of people that moved here to Denver from the East back in the 1800s. They're these spirits that say, I'm not going to follow everybody else's trail. I'm going to go blaze my own. Well, trailblazers don't usually fit real well at the family table because it requires you to give and take. It requires you to be vulnerable. It requires you to, you know, reveal that things aren't always great with you. And individualism can derail a church planning team very easily. What else?
Little cliques and that becomes some infighting between the small group.
Yeah. Yeah, infighting within the group, cliques that happen even within a church planting team. Sure. There are reasons that are documented across nationalities, across denominations, and across sending agencies as to why missionaries leave the mission field. So on that list are things like language troubles, worries and concerns back in the States or wherever they came from, health concerns or the access to good health care, educational concerns and the access to good education. But the number one reason people leave the mission field across agencies, denominations, and nationalities is intra-team conflict. Trouble getting along with other missionaries. That's the reason people leave. Is that crazy or what? Is that not the work of the enemy who wants to strike at the heart of believers' fellowship? When Jesus says in John 13, 34 and 35, "A new command I give to you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, sacrificially, unconditionally, demonstrated love, initiated love, as I have loved you, you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you're my followers, if you love one another," right? So where is the enemy going to strike his most pointed arrows? At the heart of Christian community. If we can get each other to not get along, if I can just get them to disagree and move apart from one another, they'll be ineffective. Intra-team conflict. So I did a retreat for a team in North Africa a number of years ago. None of these folks are still on the mission field. But before I got there to their team retreat, I asked the team leader, "What am I getting into here?" He said, "Well, I don't know how to put this. They don't like each other. In fact, they can't stand to be in the same room with each other." I said, "What is this, like a week-long group therapy?" He said, "Yeah, we probably need some of that." He said, "You're a counselor, right?" And I went, "Oh, no, yeah." So, sure enough, I get there, and you can feel the tension in the room. People weren't talking to one another. These people were talking about those people. And you know what it came down to? Things like, the new folks just got here, and rather than giving them our old furniture and let us get new furniture, they got the new furniture. We don't have a house with a view. Why did they get a nice house with a view? We never get the team vehicle. They've always got it. And I think they're having more kids so they can use the vehicle more. I'm telling you, things were just crazy. And so I get into this deal, and this lady speaks up, and she was an older single lady, and I just so loved her vulnerability. This is what she said. She said, "I have been on this team for a year, and I've been in culture shock almost the whole time." And she said, "I have been acting totally inappropriate in this team, and I'm so sorry for that." She said, "The problem is that nobody on this team knew me before I got here. So all of you think I'm always this way. But I'm not always this way. I've never been this way. I've only been this way since I got here." She said, "I don't even like me here, the version of me that lives here. Why should you like me?" And one of the big issues with community is the lack of pre-existing relationship. Okay, so a quick story from our church planning team. We're about a year into living there. I'm going through a culture shock month. Not just like an hour or a day. I'm like in a month of this whole deal, you know. And I'm really frustrated with the local people. I'm not learning the language nearly as fast as other folks on the team. That threatens me because I really wanted, as the leader of the team, to master this language quickly and to be able to lead our team meetings in the language. I thought that'd be really cool, you know. And here, this, you know, the youngest, punkiest guy on our team, he's learning the language like crazy. And I'm like, oh, good grief, you know. And it was really frustrating to me. We had been working and living in community for 4 years. So Scott on our team, Scott said, "You know, I need to be honest with you." He said, "I'm so glad I've known you for a long time." I said, "Really? Why?" He goes, "Because you're acting like a jerk." I'm like, "No, I'm not. You're the jerk. No, you're the jerk." You know, I mean, we kind of went back and forth with this. And he goes, "Listen," he said, "you're acting so weird and so out of character that I know this is culture shock. I'm so glad I know you. And I've known you for a long time." That moved us through a time of tension that in a normal church planting team would have set us on a road apart from one another. the two single gals on our team. If we were going to do it again, we'd have them live together before we moved overseas. But we didn't have the chance to do that. They already had leases on their apartments and stuff. We got over there. They started to get sideways with each other over the refrigerator space, you know. Who's got leftovers in there? One of them was a real leftover hound. We'd go out to eat all together. She'd be gathering everybody else's leftovers so she didn't have to pay for more food later on, you know. And so the fridge was just stocked with her leftovers, you know. And the other girl was really grossed out by leftovers, you know. And leftovers get moldy a lot faster. And you open it up and it never looks like at the restaurant. You know, it looks like something that died on the road, you know, and you put it in your fridge to preserve it, you know. And so they really didn't get along. And it got to the point in community where on any other church planting team, we would have said, we're splitting you up. You're going that team, you're going to that team. Just to be able to get with people you can get along with. We didn't do that. We said to those two gals, who from our home fellowship back in the States do you need to come and sit in the room with you to work this out? You don't have an option but to love one another with Jesus' love. How are you going to do that? So that's what happened. A lady came over from our home church fellowship. She spent a lot of time with those two gals, and it set them on a course back together to work together and live together in harmony. I'm telling you this because community may be the most essential factor of whether you have a good or bad experience overseas. In light of that, any of you that are considering an international time overseas, I want to encourage you to think this way. It's not just about God's calling on your life. It's not just about the people group you feel led to go to. It's about who God would lead you to go with. It may be that going together as community becomes as significant of a point of impact as the people that you're living among. Consider delaying your personal timetable, if necessary, to highlight and magnify the opportunity to go with people you already share church with. It makes all the difference. All right, let's talk about cause. This is the part that has to do with your evangelism, your church planting efforts, your relationship building. This has to do with your model of church. It has to do with all that is your spiritual reason for being there, your cause, right? What are some of the issues you think could come up with this? Different methods, yeah. In our sub-region, it costs about $10 million a year to keep the personnel in that sub-region. $10 million a year to have missionaries living in this region through the IMB. All right? Now follow me on this. Out of all those that are there, all those missionaries that it takes $10 million to support to live there, and that's not big salaries, by the way. That's not like $1 million per 10 people. That's not it. No, it's very little money, but a lot of people in that area. Out of all those people living there, we tried to count up the people that were actually effective doing the work of leading people to faith in Christ, starting new churches, and providing a reproducible model. That number came down to 6. Out of all the people living there, and $10 million a year, 6 had lived there long enough, knew enough, spoke enough, understood enough to be effective in the cause. Methodology question, wouldn't it cost a lot less to have a believer from a neighboring people group move in there? Couldn't we, for like, you know, $100,000, put a church planting team in that people group? Why not hire a local believer? Somebody's come to faith in Christ. They're showing evidence of being pastoral. Why not hire a local believer to do the work of evangelism? Rather than having them go out and get another job, We get paid to do it. Why not pay them to do it? This rift in methodology causes more tension on the field. Question of support and underwriting local people's needs and paying for their problems and solving it with money. And I mean, what do you do? Huge issues can come up with methodology. What else? Okay, leadership. Another major factor why people leave the mission field is because they didn't have a good experience with their supervisor. Their supervisor didn't provide adequate support, mentoring, resources, information, everything you needed to be thriving on the field. The leadership question and the methodology question are solved when you go together. Because why? You're on the same page about this before you land. And the leadership's already determined by the people in the community. Now here's another thing. Language. Another major hard reality of life overseas is that many people started studying English when they were small, and you're starting to study their language when you're out of college. Will you ever be as fluent in their language as they are fluent in your language? So I'm driving through this major metropolis city in our country, and I'm totally lost. And I can't find my way back to the highway. So I've been studying the language for almost a full year now. So I'm pretty proud of, you know, actually having made some progress, except in light of my punky church planning team members that were doing better than me. So I rolled down the window and found a local guy, and I said, in the local language, I said, how do I get back to this highway? Well, he could tell by my accent that my first language was English. So the guy in English says to me, do you want me to tell you in English or in my language? I'm like, oh, this is why we don't speak their language well. They're speaking our language better than I'm speaking their language, right? I said, tell me in English. I just didn't want to get home, you know. And so he told me, you know. But that's not true for everybody. Not everybody around the world speaks English. But the real point is that language is the language of the heart, is what you communicate spiritual truth in. And even if they speak English that works in university or it works in their business, they may not know the vocabulary that works about faith. They may not know the words to describe faith in English. So how long do you have to be there to be in this category of effective in the local language? Well, that partly depends on who you are and how you learn languages. But I'll tell you this. Most folks will say that your first 4 years is spent learning language. What did I just say a little while ago about the path to making an impact in the world for Christ is a long, hard journey. It's a hard road. There are so many times where I sat at the table with my local friends, and they would accommodate me by having their conversation in English, but every once in a while they wanted to talk about something that they didn't know the English words for, so they just launch off and at full speed in their local language. And I sat there completely lost, had no idea what they were talking about. And I realized they're talking about something in their heart. They're talking about something that they really care about. And I can't get there. I can't engage in that conversation to talk about what is in my heart. One of the biggest challenges to living overseas is staying long enough and being disciplined enough to learn the language of faith of the locals. We could just put background is another barrier. And by that I mean that if you have a church planting team or a team assembled and there's somebody there from Mars Hill Church and there's somebody there from Watermark Church, and these are churches that are real edgy. There's somebody there from Open Door Fellowship in Denver that's really just totally out there among the homeless and the poor, saving lives. And then you've got also on the team somebody from First Baptist Macon, Georgia. Anybody from Macon? Anybody from Georgia? Yeah, so best as I remember, it's one of those churches that has big columns Park City's Baptist Church in Dallas, big columns, beautiful pink interior, stained glass windows. You put a church planting team together from such radically different backgrounds of what is church. And you got some people saying, well, we've got to have an offering. When's the offering? Well, don't you think we ought to lead somebody to Christ first? We got to get out there and do faith evangelism. When are we going to do that? We got to get them in Sunday school. That's how you lead them to Christ, Sunday school. But at the same time, we're talking about people that are saying, you know what? Why don't we change our church meeting time to Friday? Because that's when the Muslims meet for their holy day. They'll relate to it a lot better if we have our holy day on their holy day. What? Have you lost your gourd? We can't change. It's always on Sunday. Easter happened on Sunday. Jesus was born on a Sunday. I'm sure of it. Check the calendar. So, the background, if you come from such radically different pictures of what is church, it can be a real problem overseas. Once again, how is that solved? Go together. Come out of the same model of church, having done the same things to make it work together. Corporation. This may be a little bit harder for you to kind of get your head around in terms of thinking in a Denver hotel room, but what do you think would be challenges or issues to the corporation side of things? Any thoughts? Yeah. Lack of clarity. That happens sometimes. I mean, we're overseas, and we don't know how to get our paycheck, and it's not being auto-deposited at our bank in the States. What are you going to do? You can't just run by there. There's no local branch where you live. ATM doesn't work, and you can't figure out why they're charging you $300 per transaction. You know, it's just crazy. Lack of clarity of how things work. What are the expectations that we have of you? Yeah, that can be a real problem. What else comes to mind?
Again, the culture thing. You know, if we bring our idea of what works, and it's totally botched, you know, things that work in America don't work perfectly.
Imported ideas. So there's this walnut farm in northwest China. And the walnut farm is the major cash crop for this people group living there. And the American missionaries living there were noticing how much of the walnuts were being destroyed because they were being hand-shelled, right? They were having a break rate of about, you know, 10% of all lost product, right? Because the people doing it by hand were breaking them up. So they have this great idea. Let's import a walnut hulling machine. They proposed this idea, got approval for it, funding for it. Tens of thousands of dollars later, this walnut hulling machine arrives in this country. And this guy gets it set up. I'm really going to bless the locals here. It's going to be a huge benefit. This hulling machine has a 2% break rate instead of a 10%. That's 8% more profit on the product, right? They used it for 1 week and then pulled the plug. And the missionary was confused. The machine's working great. You got more product going on. What's the problem? You know what the problem was? They just unemployed 15 people. 15 aunts and sisters and cousins that they know and love and treasure. Who cares about your stinking 8% broken walnuts if my cousin can keep her job? So what was imported as a great idea that would have worked great here was not a great idea there. And I think that's a big problem in our thinking about how to live overseas and what we're going to do while we're there. The best platforms I ever saw while I was there were students who, during their academic career, transferred to an international school. We're working in an area where, as foreigners, we weren't even allowed to step on the university campuses without written permission by somebody on the campus. And there was this guy named Phil who was a student there on the campus studying their language. He just enrolled as a language student. Because you could do 4 semesters of the language in America, right? Or 1 semester of the language there. He was getting 4 semesters of language credit for 1 semester living overseas. And he lived on campus, in the dorm, free access, at the table, day in and day out, day in and day out. Nobody had more impact on that campus during that semester than Phil did. People asked Phil, what are you doing here? Studying your language. Really? Let's talk. People ask us what we're doing there. We tell them, they're like, why? You must be a missionary. I mean, really, there just didn't make any sense for some of the folks that were living there. So I just want to encourage you to think about your major. Think about your skills and ask the question, where might God use that to be of benefit and blessing to somebody else in a different place? How do you build this? Well, first off, I think for our church planting team, one of the best things that we did before we left together was we hosted a church-wide flea market. And we all had different roles. This was a big garage sale, basically, for the whole church. And everybody on our church planting team had jobs. Some were in charge of organizing the space in the parking lot. Some were in charge of marketing the spaces. We sold spaces to Sunday school classes. You could buy one spot for $20, a double for $40. It's a real deal. All of it goes to church planting effort, you know. And we did advertising in the community, setting up for this big day, this big garage sale. People came from all over the city. We had people there on our church planting team that were doing cash transactions, handling the money. We had people that were there. We set up a kids bouncing deal. And, you know, and one of the funny things that happened was we put Vicky in charge of some of the details, right? And by the end of the day, we were so frustrated at her because she just stood around talking to people. Vicky wasn't doing any of her job. Like, Vicky, stop talking to people. Get to work. So, yeah. So then, like, 2 weeks later, we're going, Vicky is a relator. She's not going to do any details. What does Vicky like to do? Talk to people. So you know what she did on our church planning team? She was not in charge of the books. She wasn't in charge of any details. We show up somewhere, Vicky's job was to make the connection. We found out that with our children, we didn't know this before we moved overseas, but with our 2 little daughters, they were the biggest introduction to relationships that we could have imagined. It's a great way of using them in a, for the Lord, you know. So in the corporation, I think understanding what works, what is a blessing, how do we benefit you in a tangible way? Okay, I want to kind of pause here for a second and let you ask about any issues, trouble, problems, or things that you think might be confusing about what life overseas is like. And I'll tell you this, I don't know the answer to all of them because I've only lived in certain places overseas. But I'll try to at least talk in general principles about what it's like. Who has a thought or question or comment? Yes.
Okay. If it takes so long to learn a particular language, is it effective to go short-term, whether it's a few months or just a couple of years? It seems like that would be rather
ineffective. Yeah. Great question. Her question is, if it takes so long to learn the language effectively, is there really any benefit of going short term? And I mean even 6 weeks in the summer or 2 years. The answer to that is yes, if your role is clearly defined. The people that I spent most of my time relating to because of my platform were fluent English speakers. And we're talking about university educators and university students that were studying at the junior and senior level. At the junior senior level where we were living, the classes were taught in English. So it was easier for me to teach them the spiritual vocabulary in English than for me to learn all of the vocabulary in their language. Where people are put in places overseas where there's no English speakers whatsoever, there's no opportunity to immediately relate, I think the shorter term is less effective. But there's so many things that could be done to bless and benefit people and working in harmony and cooperation with long-term personnel. So on our team, one of the things that we tried to do was to have a combination of short-term folks and long-term folks. And today, if I went over there to that country, I'd go around with one of those guys that's still on the team because his language is far more fluent than mine is. And so by pairing them up together, it can be a very effective strategy. New Mexico State here, anybody here from New Mexico State? Yeah. So when I was with y'all's team over in North Africa, one of the cool things I saw was how they were doing so well learning the language that they were able to utilize a focused summer team coming in and complementing what they were doing by using English language and then helping introduce them to the long-term workers that could speak fluently the local language. Great question, though. Yeah, there is a room, there's room and there's a place used well for short-term efforts. Yeah. Yeah, you know, different church planting teams have different exit strategies. For ours, our defining point of knowing we were done in that city was when there was a local church that had already reproduced a couple of times and showing that it was gaining momentum without us being in the middle of it. We wanted to envision a time when they actually sent people from their city to a different city to plant a church. And so the folks that are still on our church planting team there today are still working toward that end goal. Nowhere near it, but that's the 10 to 20 year goal, the long haul goal. Yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah,
if that goal is accomplished, then you can back out of it and let the locals own it. You know, one of the best things that happened to the church in one particular country was that all the foreign missionaries got kicked out. That's the best thing that could have happened to the local church, because all of a sudden, although they weren't fully mature followers of Christ, they had to be. They were forced into leadership roles that really moved them forward in maturity. Yeah.
That brings me to my next question here. What kind of hostility toward Americans have you experienced?
Yeah, great question. What kind of hostilities do Americans experience overseas? Depends on where you are. Depends on who you're around. This last 8 years has not been good for Americans living overseas in terms of the world's perception of us. The world loved Bill Clinton with a special affection. The world has not liked George Bush with a special hatred. And most people are able to differentiate between the government and their friend. And so we didn't really find that to be a problem, but we did run into plenty of people that were so distrustful of Americans, of America, that they were distrustful of us as Americans. And so there are places where I would want to be very careful about security. All of the IMB teams have exit strategies in place. I was just talking to a friend of mine that was working in Nairobi, Kenya. And in light of the civil strife going on there in Kenya today, the church planting teams that are there have all reviewed and revised their emergency escape plans and how to get out of the country quickly and safely. We had that where we lived and felt pretty good about it. Having said that, let me just couple that by saying, I think the world is far more interested in having an American friend than they are hostile toward America. And I say that just from personal experience, that it was our local friends that when there was some kind of a terrorist incident in our region, they came to our door to make sure we just didn't hear about it on the television, on the news. They wanted to tell us, to let us know we were okay. Nobody protected and looked out for us more than our local friends. They felt personally responsible for our safety and well-being. And I can tell you this, as an American here, I never felt that way toward internationals living in America. But I felt more loved and safe and protected living in their midst than I'm sure they felt living near me. So really it's just a question of where and when and how, but I think you'd find people to be very receptive. The other church planting team that we sent, is now living in a what would be considered probably the biggest hot zone of global conflict in the world today. And their local neighbors guard them faithfully, these Americans living in their midst. Love them. That's cool to see that. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, great question. Now, are you guys just back on stateside assignment? Are you preparing to go? Are you you're praying about going by yourself as a family? Okay. She said, "What about us? I mean, this works in terms of talking about a group and a church planting team, but they're praying about going as a family on their own." And I can tell you this: some families make it work really well. Some have that independent, pioneering spirit that you can plop them down anywhere in the world. You could drop zone them and they'd thrive. And my encouragement to you would be from the day one of landing wherever you are, if you're just there with your family, immediately seek to build community with local people. The organizations that send people out like that, they ask them, find somebody locally to live with when you first arrive on the field. Don't go just rent an apartment. Move in with a local family if you can. And do everything you can. I was talking about Bert and Penny today. Do everything you can to start building immediate community with local people around you. Rely on them. Seek them out. Ask them questions. Depend on them. And they'll come over time to depend on you as well in your friendship. Likewise, the world is a different place today than when Hudson Taylor got on the boat, sailed to China, kissed his mama goodbye, said, see you in heaven, you know. The world's a different place. So it's possible to maintain a level of supportive community even if you're living remotely. Our village of 300 in Central Asia had high-speed DSL, right? So I'm sitting on my balcony of our apartment looking out at basically underdeveloped living conditions on wireless internet. It's just like cultural whiplash. So I'm able to stay in touch with and maintain community back in the States with people that I know and love and trust. And that was very helpful for us. Are you guys looking to go through the IMB as a sending agency? Just in the beginning of the process? Well, most good sending agencies ensure that missionary personnel have adequate emotional and spiritual resources and support. And I would ask that question as you go through the exploring and research process. If we end up in a place where it's just our family, we're the only believers there, what kind of support and resources and help can we expect from you? Those are important questions. Somebody else? Yep. Yeah, we mutually disagreed from the very start. Yeah, I was convinced we were supposed to go. My wife was absolutely convinced we were not supposed to go. And that delayed our departure as a family 2 years. And the beautiful part of that is that the group we went with 2 years later was a beautiful image of community. And I'm glad we didn't go back when I thought we should have gone. The process was long and difficult for us, but I think the defining question was, are we supposed to be a part of this cause? And if we are, how can we do that? So this may surprise you, I didn't have a real burning passion or burden for our people group before we moved. I had a passion and a burden for this process of exporting community in church to a place that had no church. And so that's what really got me involved in it. And so I kept waiting around for God to reveal to me what people group I was supposed to really love, you know, to go work among them. Well, in evaluating my own life, I don't really have a burning passion and love for lost people I meet day in and day out. I have a real love for people that I know, right? And people that I know and don't follow Jesus, I have a real burden for their soul. So sure enough, what happened was we got overseas. We started living among this people group. We started to get to know them. And then I realized, wow, I really do long for their salvation. So for us, the process was not handwriting on the wall. It wasn't some magnanimous spiritual moment in a quiet time. It wasn't, you know, my wife and I both writing on a piece of paper secretly and then it matching up. It was very much a, let's define what would be the green light for us to be a part of this. And for us, it was community to go with. And it was getting to know the people that we were going to live among. And I just want to encourage you to be careful about trying to define your calling like you've heard other people's. The Lord can do anything He wants to do in any way He wants to do it. And for somebody to say that your calling and your sense of leadership to go has to look like this or sound like this or happen that way, I'd be real careful about that. Yep. Yeah. So before we packed up and moved over here, all of us had ended up going to that place short term. A 1 week project, 4 week summer focus team. We did any number of short term deals over here. So a group of 10 would go, they'd come back. 4 out of those 10 said, I'm in, man. 6 would go back into their life and be changed as a result of the experience, but 4 would say, I want to be a part of whatever is happening here, you know? So there was a long process of that. But over time, by narrowing the scope, rather than a shotgun approach to doing missions, where you got a group there, you got somebody here, you got somebody here, and somebody here, our church said, we're going to make a targeted impact among those people. So, you know, if you're in a campus ministry or you're in a church that is consistently sending people back to the same place, then I would venture to say that the Lord's probably raising up a group of people within that ministry to want to go back there. So the question would be, what would it look like for us to go back together? Yeah. Good. Something else? Yeah. Yeah, our marriage never struggled more than when we lived overseas. Our marriage was not designed to live apart from Christian community. My wife and I do better as spouses when we're around other Christian spouses. And it was relationally a pretty brutal time for us, for my wife and I, living overseas. Because the way we processed culture shock, the way that we thought about our home being a place of hospitality for locals was very different. And back in the States, when we'd have troubles, we'd talk to our friends. We'd say, man, can you believe she did that? And I'd just, you know, unpack whatever incident happened, and my buddy would say, you're such a fool. You know, I mean, look at this. And, you know, he would set me straight. And there were women in my wife's life who made her a better wife. When we got overseas, we didn't have those peer relationships as believers. And so I think our marriage really suffered during those 2 years as a result of that. Having said that, I'll say again that there are some marriages and some families that are, you know, they're the Ingalls family. Put them out on the prairie and they'll build a house. And, you know, they'll relate to the cattle and the people that are there. And the, what's that old man's, the old cuss, the name in Little House on the Prairie? What was his name? You remember him? Red, or anybody ever seen Little House on the... You know what I'm talking about? Little House? Okay. Anyway, you just find people. First off, whenever we went into other cities, not where we lived, but other places where there were missionary families, we spent extended time with those couples. And that really helped us a lot. Secondly, we reestablished connection with the Christian couples that we had life with, shared life with before we moved overseas. So they would call us, we would call them, we'd talk about issues and things going on. And between missionaries living in the region and trusted friends we had back in the States, we were able to work through our relational issues and really work through it as well as we could. It took us a year after we moved back to the States to really heal. I hate to say that, but it's just the truth. It just took our marriage a year to recover. Yeah, the team that moved in after us, the next wave, they were all couples. They just moved in as we were preparing to leave. Yeah. Oh, well, with local people? Well, we developed a deep sense of trust and community with local friends, but they didn't embrace the faith dimension. So it was hard for us to really kind of talk through with them our perspective on church planning, because they weren't really in a position to understand what we were doing there. So, yeah, I mean, our loving, trusting local friends, some of them were married, and we enjoyed their fellowship with them. But in terms of having real soul support from other believers, our local friends didn't provide that. We had to find that in other places. It's hard. It's hard. And yet, the long, hard journey is a part of accomplishing the Father's will and finishing His work. It's totally worth it in the end. Let's wrap it up, and I'll be around for a few more minutes if you have other questions, but thanks for taking time to be a part of this workshop. Let me pray for us. Father, I pray today that wherever You lead these men and women, that You would provide support, community, strength and endurance, favor and approval. I pray, Lord, that You would empower them to do Your work and accomplish Your work on the earth. And I pray right now, Lord, wherever they end up, I pray right now for the friends that they will make who are already living in that place. I pray that You'd be preparing those local people for these believer friends. And that when they arrive in that country, among those people, the friendships would develop quickly for Your glory. We thank You and we praise You today. In Jesus' name, amen.